Hi, and welcome to the Kubernetes podcast from Google. I'm Adam Glick.
And I'm Craig Box. I love a blog series by a guy called Jimmy Ma, who writes this great blog called The Digital Antiquarian, where every couple of weeks he's working his way through computer gaming history, starting at the 8-bit era, 1980s, and sort of working his way up. He's at 1993 now, and this week's article was about what is actually my favorite game of all time, a game called Day of the Tentacle.
Oh, yes.
It's inspired me that I need to go out. There's been a remastered version of it made in the last few years, so I'm going to go and replay that game and relive the experience of being a teenager and trying to solve all those puzzles.
All those old Scum games were just so good, but I think it was the writing that really made those games. The jokes are fantastic.
Yeah, so one of the things you can do, like I remember a lot of the answers to the puzzles, so there's not going to be so much of a challenge there, but it's great being able to do things like turn on the director's commentary and listen to what they were thinking about when they designed all these features.
Awesome. Speaking of interesting games and writing, I stumbled across a game this week called The Vigil Files. It's another one of these where your device, basically, they give you a OS experience within the OS. So they create, you know, fake email, fake texting, calls, files, all that stuff. But it ties it into the real world in a way that other ones of these games haven't. So as you're doing your investigation into what has happened, person has gone missing, and you're trying to figure out what happened, you actually have to go to real world websites and actually search the regular internet, because they've actually taken it a step further than just the experience in the device, but actually built websites and built profiles of things out on the internet for you to go find and use that data back into the game. So it's another level of immersion. If we continue to follow this to its logical conclusion, at some point you'll just have regular old life mysteries, will require no devices at all.
I wonder, though, like, what happens when people solve the game and put up a walkthrough, and the action you have to take in order to solve the game is to search for something on the internet? Surely you'll just find the answers before you find the things that they tried to hide for you.
That is an interesting question.
Better play it quickly before it's spoiled for you.
I have only just begun the game, and I can tell you, from the internet searches that I've done, the things that show up are indeed, like, the sites that I'm meaning to find. I've not found any spoilers yet, so...
In a week's time, it'll all be Gamma Sutra.
We'll see. They've done a good job so far.
Let's get to the news.
Break out your party hats, streamers, and cake, because Kubernetes birthday is upon us. Last week marks the 5th anniversary of Google's making Kubernetes available, and there have been lots of events, interviews, meetups, tweetstorms, AMAs, and infographics this past week. Personally, we'd like to wish Kubernetes a happy 5th birthday, with many more good years to come.
Apple held their Worldwide Developers Conference last week, and I am somewhat surprised to announce that there was some Kubernetes-related news. MacStadium, a hosting provider for Mac hardware commonly used by iOS developers, announced Orca with a K, which stands for Orchestration with Kubernetes on Apple. Orca puts macOS in a Docker container and lets you use Kubernetes to manage the lifecycle of macOS VMs running on real Mac hardware, as required by Apple's license agreement. The platform has been launched into public beta and is now taking signups, with full release slated for later this year, alongside the return of the cheese grater Mac Pro.
Platform 9 ran a survey at their booth at KubeCon EU and point to 5 big takeaways in a blog post this week. They said that Kubernetes has had massive increase in production use, with over 47% of respondents saying that they run Kubernetes in production today. Operational complexity is cited as the biggest challenge for organizations, followed by the migration of legacy apps and access to talent. They also noted that hybrid deployments are growing, and a majority of respondents stated that they run both in a public cloud and on-prem, though on-prem still is the most popular deployment location. Other OSS projects in the cloud-native world are growing fast, with Prometheus being the most common in production, and Istio being the one that is being evaluated by the most people. Finally, and perhaps unsurprisingly, CI/CD was identified as the most common workload running in people's Kubernetes clusters.
Did he just say access to talent is a challenge? Find people such as yourselves with Kubernetes skills continue to be in high demand. An article in the Enterprises Project ran the numbers, and while their method is decidedly unscientific, they call out how much you could be making bringing container orchestration to the world. In particular, the article claims the US national average for jobs that mention Kubernetes is over $140,000 per year. The number of jobs asking for Kubernetes has increased 30% since January on one US job site. Plus, we're always hiring at Google.
And that's the news. Darren Shepard is the co-founder and chief architect at Rancher Labs, where he's led the development and creation of Rancher OS, Longhorn, K3OS, and Rio, amongst others. Prior to Rancher, Darren served as senior principal engineer at Citrix, where he worked on CloudStack, OpenStack, Docker, and building infrastructure orchestration technology. Prior to Citrix, He worked at GoDaddy, where he designed and led the team that implemented both public and private IaaS clouds. Welcome to the show, Darren.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Your Twitter handle is IBuildTheCloud, and with that bio, that seems quite valid.
Yeah.
You've been working at Rancher since 2014. That was the year that Kubernetes was founded. What was the motivation for starting the company?
My background, you know, my handle is IBuildTheCloud. So I've been doing cloud-based technology. Specifically, I started really in IaaS. Mm-hmm. So I worked a lot in the OpenStack CloudSec space. And so I was working in that space. That's what I was doing when I was at Citrix. And so when Docker came on the scene with all the containers and everything, it was pretty clear that it was going to be the next major thing.
Yeah.
And then, so that's really why we started Rancher, was just try to figure out some way to make containers usable and manage them. So, you know, we had a history of building orchestration systems around VMs. So, you know, build orchestration systems around containers.
So when Rancher was launched as a platform, what orchestration systems existed and how did you adopt them?
At the time when we started, there wasn't really a lot. I mean, because it was, I believe it was before Kubernetes was actually announced. So there really wasn't much orchestration system. So we actually started building our own. So our original product, like the Rancher 1.0, we're on Rancher 2.2 or something now. So our original Rancher 1.0 was built on our own orchestration technology. And so that was at the time. We've always been a very, very, very user-focused company. So we just kind of followed where the users were. At the time, users were all basically just running Docker, like single Docker daemons. And so we put together an orchestration system that would piece together all the single Docker daemons, make them into cluster and deploy containers. So that's where we started with. Then eventually, you know, as Kubernetes became more and more popular, we ended up with our Rancher 2.0 doing kind of a hard pivot and just moving completely to Kubernetes. So it was pretty clear that it's where the market was going, but it's also just a superior technology, anything we built.
How did you work from your own orchestration system and people built on the 1.0 product to 2.0? How did you make that change? Was that a complete rewrite?
Unfortunately, yeah, it was a complete rewrite. I mean, it was a pretty drastic change. So what we had before was, it was written in Java. It was a Java-based system, and you know, it was just talking to the Docker daemons. And so when we initially picked up Kubernetes, we integrated Kubernetes into Rancher. So like our Rancher 1.6 product does support Kubernetes. And so it was kind of a mixture of like our orchestration and Kubernetes. And technically, that's really not the best way to do things. You kind of fight between the two systems. So when we did 2.0, we're like, you know, we're going to go completely all in on Kubernetes, just 110%. I mean, I think we were kind of ahead of the curve in terms of like writing controllers and whatnot, is because the entire Rancher architecture and everything is based on top of Kubernetes. It's just a collection of controllers. Rancher just actually runs as a set of controllers on top of a Kubernetes. So you have like a dedicated Kubernetes cluster for the management plane, which then manages a bunch of other clusters. So it was a pretty big rewrite, pretty massive undertaking, and it was quite a learning experience. We learned quite a bit. I mean, it was nice, you know, programming everything in kind of Kubernetes style, because that helped us understand a lot of kind of what users are going through. And then eventually, as people like the operator market and those things have taken off, we have a really good understanding of how to build those things.
As you made that pivot to being more pure play Kubernetes, the cloud vendors were starting to bring services out as well. Do you target your product more at people who want to run in cloud or on-premises or a combination of the two?
It's really a combination of the two. I mean, kind of what we're selling right now, like our, you know, pitch or product or whatever, is really, it's a multi-cluster management tool. Mm-hmm. And that's where we've always focused, because there was kind of this idea in the beginning of like, I'm going to run this big, massive Kubernetes cluster. And then as we saw users adopt it and pick it up in like enterprise, is we weren't really seeing that. They were actually building a lot of clusters. And so we pretty quickly determined that we needed some solution that was not just oriented towards a single cluster, but managing a bunch of them. And so we have our own distribution of Kubernetes called RKE, but that's not like an essential part of Rancher. Like if you're using GKE, EKS, AKS, one of those cloud hosts, or DigitalOcean, basically any Kubernetes will support. And I think that's what's kind of helped us from an open source perspective. You know, people kind of love the tools that, you know, it'll work pretty much anywhere. It's not heavily tied to just like our distribution.
You mentioned in the intro that you worked on Longhorn.
Yeah.
You want to say what Longhorn is? I assume it is not the ill-fated version of Microsoft Windows.
So Longhorn is actually our storage technology. Kind of the funny story there is actually when we first pitched the company, we actually pitched building a storage technology and pitched to the investors, whatever. By the time we started the company, we were pretty heavily focused on containers. But the original pitch was actually storage technology. And so we started developing a storage technology quite early. And that's what Longhorn is. And so we really wanted to orient it towards just kind of container native storage. And we've worked on that technology for quite a few years. That market is, evolving, it's coming along. So we're finally just going to be pushing out probably a GA of that product this year. So 4 or 5 years later. So it's like we started with storage, but we ended up doing all this orchestration and management. But one of the interesting things about, like, so Longhorn, as we put that out there, is that like OpenEBS was actually built initially on Longhorn. Yeah. I mean, I think at this point they've replaced the storage engine or whatever, but it was, you know, we started working with them pretty early.
In retrospect, do you regret choosing that name?
Not really, no. When we started, it was at the time of Docker, and everything was like a whale or a dolphin, or I don't know. So it was like we wanted something that was just completely different, and so we went with cows. So all of our terms and everything is, you know, typically a lot more like cow and rodeo and cowboy type stuff. And
is that sort of from the pets versus cattle? Is that where that came from?
Yeah, that was actually where it was. So the origin of the company, Rancher, was like our first orchestration system. It was written as an open source project when I was working at Citrix, and it was called Cattle, and it was that analogy. So that analogy became really popular in the OpenStack world. I mean, it's existed for, you know, longer before that, but like in the OpenStack world, it started becoming this kind of, you know, popular thing that people are throwing around. And so when I built that orchestration system, I called it Cattle. And then it was like, well, you know, we need a name for a company. And then Rancher was kind of something related in the same realm.
You can see a picture of Darren in his Rancher shirt in the show notes, shaped like the food pyramid of beef, I guess, with all of the parts of the cow and how they relate to Kubernetes.
Yeah, I always feel bad when people think that I actually like ranch cows.
They're like, I've never heard of the infrastructure part of the cow.
Yeah.
Which cut is that?
Yeah.
Is that tasty? How do I roast that?
They'll come up and they're like, oh, you know, my brother's a rancher or something. Then they get a little closer and start reading the shirt. And they're like, wait, what is that? I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't know anything about that. I just program computers.
Well, in fairness to you, we have been having a bit of fun with some of the names of your products recently.
Oh, yeah.
So recently you launched K3S.
Mm-hmm.
Or Keys, as I like to call it.
Yeah.
First off, how do you pronounce it?
Yeah, so we haven't actually said there's an official pronunciation. I always say K3S.
Would you like to make that official here and now?
I don't know. I appreciate all the funny different ways that people pronounce it. So
the bug thread, I do believe, has Bodhi McBoatface as one of the potential pronunciations.
Yes. That was one I was hoping would officially catch on.
Not cow-themed.
No. And so K3S, I mean, where the project came from and the name came from, it was a side project of my own. I was working on this project Rio, which is something we actually just recently announced. So at the time, we were just looking for, we're like, I just need a simple way to spin up a Kubernetes cluster. And so I built K3S. And so when I first created the repo, I just called it K3S. And it still has the title. It says 5 less than Kubernetes. Because the idea was that it was just supposed to be smaller.
So, was it not called K-A-T-E-S at one point?
Kates
as an abbreviation?
It was. We dropped that because
I said that wasn't half confusing.
So the actual, it used to be, say it was K3S, which stands for Kates, K-A-T-E-S, which is abbreviated. What was it? No,
it's a longer abbreviation of a shorter term.
Yeah. So it was like Kates stands for Kates, which is another word for K-8S, which is Kubernetes. So it was like completely geeky.
So Bodhi McBoatface it is.
Yes. Our marketing team hates it.
What changes did you make from standard upstream Kubernetes with Keys?
So the idea, like when I first built it, because I was saying it was like just kind of a side project, I just ripped out all the functionality I didn't like. So that was the objective criteria there. But no, once we finally launched it as a project, because there's a whole kind of story of how it kind of came to be. But when we finally launched it, what we focused on was just pulling out the functionality that most likely will be removed from Kubernetes anyways. So we're just kind of like ahead of the curve on, you know, lightening up Kubernetes. So we pulled out cloud providers, all the in-storage driver plugins, because pretty much all these things could be replaced with an out-of-tree solution. But then we also deleted all of the non-default emission controllers. And the reason for that is just our experiences with the cloud-hosted Kubernetes. You don't have the ability to flip on arbitrary emission controllers.
Mm-hmm.
So as a user, you really shouldn't, you know, build a solution around one of these custom things because it's not very portable. It's not going to work anywhere. So we just kind of say, well, you know, you really shouldn't be using these things. So we just delete them all.
Do we need replica sets? They can go.
That's fine. We tried to delete them, but no. So we started off with like deleting APIs too, like older APIs. But we found various weird use cases. People are still using them. So we brought them back in. So the majority of the things that are missing right now is the emission controllers, storage drivers, and cloud providers.
I've seen people talking about keys in the context of like edge computing mm-hmm. and, you know, on low power machinery. But a lot of the chatter that I've seen when people talk about it online and some of the things you've talked about today is about really simplification. What's your vision for where this will fit for people?
All of the above. So it's kind of going back to kind of like why we ended up launching this thing was like, it was a side project that kind of some people noticed that I was working on and then they got interested and they're like, hey, that'd be really cool for a little Kubernetes. So we saw that there was some interest. And so when we actually looked at putting together a real project and making a big announcement, at the same time, we were basically starting to getting all these requests from companies of they wanted to put Kubernetes on the edge. So it really made sense that there was an immediate use case and a business case for this, and that was edge computing. So when we marketed this, we put everything towards edge. That was the message we put out there. But the reality is K3S is really two things. It's a smaller distribution. It's trying to reduce the memory consumption, but it's also very easy to install. You know, so for the edge, that works well because it's kind of like a low-touch environment. You want more of like an appliance. So it worked well for the edge, but that easy to install, I think, is what's really caught on with like community. So even though we market it towards edge and we're having good success there and working with a lot of companies on putting it on the edge, from a user perspective, they've just been putting it like in development, CI/CD. It's just so easy to install that people are just using it everywhere now.
What architectures are supported with it?
So it's still just Kubernetes, but we don't have like an HA. So like the way we package it is like Kubernetes has like the various components, API server, controller manager, scheduler, kubelet, kubeproxy. We package everything into just basically two basic components of like server and an agent. So from a user, it's pretty obvious if you launch a server, you run agents on the... Right now, we don't support HA. HA is coming. That's kind of the big blocker for us to say that it's beta. But we wanted to make sure that, like, you know, obviously Kubernetes already supports HA, but the idea of putting HA in K3S was like, well, HA should be just as easy as the standalone. And so we're really putting a lot of effort into making it really easy, you know, not have to worry about all the load balancing issues and spinning up an etcd and stuff.
For the edge scenarios, do you support ARM as well as x86?
Yeah. So like out of the box, we supported Intel x86 64-bit and then ARM 64 and ARM V7. So we do actually get a lot of requests for ARM V6. We don't support V6 and older. That's just because the ecosystem, there's just like not a lot that's available. But technically you can compile it. It's just a lot of effort. But so we support ARM V7. And that was actually a lot of effort put into getting things to just seamlessly work on ARM and especially like Raspberry Pi because it's so popular among hobbyists. And I mean, there's valid business cases too where people are putting Raspberry Pis in production.
When it comes to edge or appliance computing, quite often you're talking about devices that by definition, they're not in a corporate data center and they are possibly in stores or mm-hmm. in factories or so on. What are the considerations in making something like that easy to install for people who are in an environment where maybe there's no IT person around or you're connected to the larger corporate network, but you're not in the core of it?
Yeah. I mean, so one of like the real common use cases that we're seeing right now is putting it like in the store. So some type of retail branch. And so for those situations, they don't really have a lot of technical expertise on premise. They just need something that basically they can kind of ship the devices, that something's already pre-installed. It should basically just work. If it crashes or there's something, it should be able to be rebuilt very easily. You know, basically just like re-image it or reflash the device. So the operations need to, you know, it really needs to be treated like an appliance. And these days, what we're seeing with a lot of like the way people are deploying, if you're deploying Kubernetes yourself, is like, you know, when we talk about like that pets versus cattle thing, is people really treat clusters as pets because they hold state and they're very protective of them or whatever. And so we can't treat these things like that. It has to just be, you can just kind of blow away the cluster and it comes back. So that's one of the considerations. The other is that when you're looking at, you know, I've got 2,000 stores. Well, now how do I manage 2,000 clusters? How do I roll out applications across all these things? And to make it even worse is they typically have very poor connections. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them I might still have dial-up or whatever. So how do we manage those things? So those become some of the challenges. And one of the things that we're focused on besides is just the K3S, which is just the distribution, is also how do we put together the full solution? That's where like K3OS and then also a management portion of managing the applications.
Now you've just mentioned the operating system. So it seems like if you want to help people get something installed, then that's something that would benefit you to have more control of it. What's the story of how K3OS came to be?
Yeah, K3OS was just kind of the logical extension of like, okay, well, if I'm putting this distribution on the edge, what's the operating system that I use? And it's like, well, you can really use any operating system. It works on anything. But the majority of the OS is not really needed anymore. So the idea with K3OS was, what's the minimal amount of OS that we can have to run K3S, which is basically nothing. But then the key thing that we wanted to do was, well, can we actually manage the operating system using Kubernetes? So one of the key components of K3OS is an operator that runs in the cluster, which is also looking at the OS. And so the way that you upgrade the OS is you're actually just updating a resource in Kubernetes. So now I can push an update to my cluster for the operating system through a Helm chart. You know, it's like just fits into whatever Kubernetes flow. I mean, one of the things that, you know, we absolutely love about Kubernetes is the API, the consistency, how it kind of plugs into all these tools and everything. So it's like, if I have operators that can, let's say, deploy a database, why can't they manage the OS too?
You already had a Rancher OS. Why did you build a new operating system?
Really, the reason for it is, like, Rancher OS, when we built it, was it was always the idea was that it was supposed to be singular focused on just running Docker containers. Like, we didn't want any scope creep. We just kind of wanted to just do one thing and do it really well. And so we built Rancher OS, and we have a good user base and, you know, customers, and people really like that product. And it didn't really make sense to take that and then turn it into a Kubernetes thing. It's like, if Rancher OS 2 was then Kubernetes, like, it just didn't seem to be the right thing. So we really wanted to build an operating system, which was something that was an OS really tailored for Kubernetes. And so we kind of really felt it was a different product. So that's why we have Rancher OS and then K3OS. They're kind of two different realms right now.
How should we think about K3OS in the existing ecosystem of kind of container and Kubernetes focused operating systems?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think it fits into the realm of container distributions, but I think it kind of goes a little bit further than just a container distribution, because K3OS is really intended to be an operating system specifically for a Kubernetes cluster. So if you're not running a Kubernetes cluster, it kind of only has half of its functionality. You can't really upgrade it, for example. So it's very similar to CoreOS, Atomic, you know, Rancher OS, the previous one. So it kind of fits into that realm. It has a lot of features similar to those things. But then it kind of takes it one step further of not just being a container distribution. It's more like a, I don't know, distribution for a cluster. So a little bit uncharted territory.
Now, again, we didn't have any guidance on how to pronounce this. So a little birdie told me it might be pronounced chaos. And I'm not going to tell you that little birdie was probably me. I don't want to pretend that Adam made me do it or anything. But,
That's a good one, yeah. Well, the K3S name was so bad, then we figured, you know, the logical thing would be a K3SOS, but that just seemed like too much, so we just dropped the S and went with K3OS. So just,
you could drop the S and call it Queso.
Yeah,
that's kind of a cheesy name.
No, I think it works out perfect, because when we launched Rancher OS, the joke was always that it was Rancheros, like Huevos Rancheros. Uh-huh. Yeah, so we can have Huevos Rancheros and Queso.
Cheese comes from cows.
Yeah,
do we?
Can we look forward to more things that have the K3 prefix on them?
Yeah, so I mean, there was something that came out of the community, and then we kind of adopted it. It's kind of this like official community project. So there's K3D, which is this wrapper around K3S specifically for development that kind of follows the same style as Kind, which is Kubernetes and Docker. So people really, really like this tool. It's just a simple command line that will spin up K3S clusters in Docker on your laptop or whatever. So for development, I mean, you get a cluster in like 3 seconds. So it's been really cool. So my marketing team, they hate K3S, but we keep pitching more. So there's another project that we just started working on, but we haven't really fully put it out there yet, which is called K3V, which is in the virtualized Kubernetes realm. Yeah, so you'll probably see us fool around with this with the name a little bit more.
Have you heard of a band called the Kaiser Chiefs? No one ever abbreviates them K10S.
Yeah.
That's dumb.
I think you should write that into them.
Yeah.
So breaking from the K3 prefix, you recently announced at KubeCon the release of Rio. Mm-hmm. What is Rio?
Rio, I mean, I think for a lot of people, they'll kind of understand. So Rio is built on top of Istio and Knative. So it brings in a lot of functionality from those platforms. Really, from an end user perspective, what we've been calling it is a micropaaS, because it has a lot of the same functionality historically you would see in a PaaS, but we feel a kind of a lighter weight, simpler approach to this. But in terms of the type of functionality that you're going to get out of it, is going to be, you know, automatic like DNS, TLS, HTTPS, auto scaling, source to image building, so like get webhooks. All the service mesh type functionality, which is monitoring and the metrics, routing, circuit breakers, so all those type of things. But fundamentally, Rio is really focused on the end user of trying to get users using Kubernetes. So not so much like we do a lot right now around people operating and running clusters, and Rio is much more of like, how do you within an organization expose Kubernetes to people and get them to easily consume it?
What is the interface that one of those users will have?
The whole thing is written, you know, Kubernetes style architecture. So it's basically a controller running. So it's represented as a couple very simple Kubernetes types. So custom resources. So you can interact with it through kubectl or any other existing Kubernetes flow that you have. But then we also provide a CLI, which then makes the experience really, really nice and really easy. So even if you don't even want to deal with the underlying types, you can just use the CLI. But if you're more savvy, you can use the kubectl and automate it however you want.
Is it tied to a particular language that people would use, or is it language agnostic?
Under the hood, we're using Knative. So Knative has these build templates. And the way those templates, they're very kind of agnostic. They can build pretty much anything. So the Rio, we actually start with just the Dockerfile-based builds. And so it'll work with any language, you know, basically anything. But with the build templates, you can bring in like build packs, which then would support like specific Java or kind of the Heroku style. Or you can even customize it further and just kind of do one-off things. So, you know, you might see within like a enterprise would do that.
Do you see that it's practical for developers to be given a hook in a Git repository where they push things and the magic happens? Or do you feel that they will actually want to have a bit more control and customization over how their code is built?
I think it depends. And that was kind of the idea of like why we say like micropaths is like we were trying to figure out smaller, less restrictive kind of components or primitives. And so if you want, you can just basically give Rio a Git location and it will build it and deploy it. If you don't, then you can plug it into a pipeline really easily because it is still just a Kubernetes API and you can just build your image your own way and then just push a resource into Kubernetes. So we think it's flexible enough that it will accomplish both. Because we see it even like within our own company, the stuff that we deploy to production. You know, some things we have running through a pipeline and it's very extensive. And then some things are like our website, which we just really want to push out to production through a very simple build.
We've talked about a number of the projects that you've put together with Rancher and put out there. We haven't talked about foundations. Do you intend for these to eventually go into a foundation, or are they things that you want to kind of keep in Rancher but make sure that they're open source?
No, all of these projects that we've mentioned, K3S, K3OS, and Rio, we'd very much like to be able to push those into a foundation if we can. Rio, since it just came out of KubeCon, that's a little early to start those discussions, but K3S, which is kind of the one we announced first, that one, talks are kind of going on right now of how we can push that if it makes sense. Like, we'd very much like to see it go into CNCF. So we have no, you know, kind of as a company, what we're very, very focused on open source. We actually don't sell, we don't have any proprietary stuff. And so we're very interested in getting these things into a foundation.
I've just realized that Rio can legitimately be abbreviated R1O. There you go. That's tying together all the naming.
I think if they're going to do that, they need to make it dance on the sand.
Wow. That's pretty good.
And with that, we'd like to say thank you very much to Darren for joining us today.
All right. Thank you.
You can find Rancher Labs at rancher.com and find Darren on Twitter at iBuildTheCloud.
Thanks for listening. As always, if you've enjoyed this show, please help us spread the word by telling a friend. If you have any feedback for us, you can find us on Twitter at KubernetesPod or reach us by email at KubernetesPodcast@google.com.
You can also check out our website at KubernetesPodcast.com with our show notes and episode transcripts. Until next time, take care.
Catch you next week.